Hey, it's Daniel Tardy. Thanks for listening to the Entree Leadership Podcast. Did you know that the lessons taught by Dave in this podcast are a part of our Entree Leadership Master Series event? Join us at our next event to hear the entire Entree Leadership curriculum in person. This is a special edition at our office in Nashville, Tennessee, May 5th through the 11th. To get more details or to register, give us a call at 888-22-PEACE. That's 888-227-3223. Or check out the Master Series event at entreeleadership.com.
Welcome to Dave Ramsey's Entree Leadership Podcast. This is the place to learn what Dave Ramsey and his team teach about leadership and business. On today's show, Dave talks about the importance of saving money as a business and the three uses of retained earnings. We're also kicking off the new year with an incredible interview with one of our favorite people on the planet, Rabbi Daniel Lappin. And if you do not know of Rabbi Lappin, I believe after the end of this, you are absolutely going to be a fan. Who am I? My name is Chris Licurdo, and I am your host for the Entree Leadership Podcast. And I want to thank you for joining us for another year, kicking off this new year right, the right way. Today, we have part two of the financial piece for the Entree Leader lesson. Dave is going to be talking to you about why it's important to have a plan for savings inside of your business. Yes, every single person needs to hear this. So here is Dave Ramsey with financial piece for the Entree Leader.
My mother used to say stuff like, we're going to squirrel some money away. You ever heard that? We're going to squirrel some money away. We're going to put some nuts in the nest so when winter comes, we got something to eat. That's what squirrel money. It's what she used to call it, squirrel money. It took me years to figure out what she meant by that. We got squirrel money. What's the squirrel got to do with it? I didn't understand. But it was like the simple concept of being ready for hard times, the emergency fund. Retained earnings is used for more than just emergencies, but you need to build retained earnings. It's very difficult, though, in the world we live, just trying to survive. In addition to that, stay out of debt. In addition to that, Dave's saying save money. Number one, we save money for emergencies. That's what retained earnings are for. When times get tough, we are our own line of credit. Number two, we're investing back into the business. It's time to grow the business. We're going to try a new product line. We're going to invest in a marketing plan. We're going to buy. Some of you ask, I don't know when I'm able to hire employees when you have some retained earnings. You can't hire employees on a bet.
I sure hope we make enough by Friday to pay the new guy.
Not a plan. That's an integrity issue. So you got to build up a little bit of a war chest to be able to take on the responsibility of people and their families coming to you. Not a huge one, but you got to have something there, a little bit of margin, a little bit of wiggle room. When you hire a team member, that's investing back into the business. And then number three, capitalizing on opportunities. If you're sitting on a pile of cash, you have the ability to buy competitors out at pennies on the dollar. You buy vendors out when they get in trouble at pennies on the dollar. I have really profited, sadly, in the last 18 months from some of the folks we interact with that were in serious trouble, happy to have some cash infusion, and we were able to get bargains on some things. And why? Because we're sitting in a cash position and they're toast. And it's people we loved, but we had relationship with, but they needed the help, and we're going to get a deal in that process. So that's how it works. Everybody won, sort of. But you can't capitalize on those opportunities if you don't have the cash. And so people are like, I hear people all the time right now, real estate's a great deal right now. Should I buy a bunch of real estate? Not if you're going into debt for it. But on a personal level, I'm buying real estate like crazy because it's best I've seen it in 50 years. I've never seen it this good. And so I'm loving real estate right now, but I'm buying it all with cash. So I'm able to, and that's not business, that's personal investing, but it's the same concept. When you're in a cash position, you can take advantage of situations. Good rule of thumb is to retain 50% of your annual expenses in a money market type account. So there's you a big goal, and that's a big goal. Debt-free with 6 months set aside. So if your expenses are $4 million a year, you're sitting on $2 million worth of capital. Wow, that's a lot.
Isn't that a bad investment?
Nope. Survival is a great investment. It's not peace of mind. I'm not freaking out like everybody else is freaking out. You come up to me, we got an issue, we can look at it and go, make that decision. If I got to let somebody go, I want to give them some extra severance. I don't have to think about it. It's not an issue. Money doesn't enter into my decision making anymore, except to the degree of wisdom, but need for money doesn't enter into it. Changes how you do business permanently when you get yourself in that position. Now, we call this account at our place the Sharon account. And the reason is that in the early days, one of the things that Sharon making the decisions, Proverbs 31, who can find a virtuous wife, for her worth is far above rubies, the heart of her husband safely trusts her, he will have no lack of gain. The first several years of the business, not only did she go on those spousal interviews with us, I actually talked her into, cajoled, pleaded with, begged, and demanded that she come to the office for what we called in those days our manager's meeting. Now it's our EVP meeting. But on Mondays, way back then, just like we do today, from 11 to 12, we would sit for an hour with the key guys. It was Matt and Lewis and Bill and me and Sharon. And she really didn't want to come. She didn't like it. Half the time she sat there with her lip out. But I was not going to move forward in those early days of business without her input and looking at this thing. And so she would come and she would talk sometimes, and sometimes she'd just be in a bad mood, truthfully, and it wasn't always pleasant. And so we're sitting there doing this thing, and one week, this is early in the business, we're whining and groaning and moaning and grumbling about cash flow. This is leaders behind closed doors going, man, I'm tired of this. I'm tired. Are we ever going to be able to get ahead? You know, just whining, having a whine party. Y'all ever have one of those? And so we're just sitting around, you know, moaning and, you know, Matt, if you don't get that receivable in, we're going to have trouble making payroll Friday. You're going to have to get this in. You all have these discussions in the early days. You know what I'm talking about. It's tight. What do I mean? Money. It's tight. We got to get this collected, and we got to get, you know, what can we sell? I wonder what we could do this week to move something around, to, you know, and it, you know, right on edge, trying to make it by Friday, Monday morning. And she said, well, I know what Gerald's problem is. We said, oh, really? What? Well, you're hypocrites. Great. Thank you for being here, Obi-Wan. Now, enlighten us, your insight from the Force. What the crap are you talking about? We're hypocrites. What do you mean we're hypocrites? She said, well, you run around all over the country telling everybody to have an emergency fund, and you don't have an emergency fund. Crap, you're right. I don't like that, but you're right. That day, we started setting aside a percentage of our net profits every month to build the retained earnings account. And from that day till this, the Sharon account has continually grown every year. As the business has grown, as we pour into it, we've got the option of cutting that back or raising that up. We actually have never changed the percentage. And it's not a magic number, so it doesn't matter what the number is. You decide what your number is. But a percentage of our bottom line for 15 years has gone into retained earnings, regardless of what's going on. We don't have any money left down here until that happens. As a matter of fact, the EVP's bonuses come and are calculated after that. The other VP's bonuses are calculated before that. But that's a line item on the EVP's side. We take that out and before we split in the calculation. You know, that net profit compensation model I was talking about, that, you know, that's how big a deal this is, that how smart it is to have cash in a cashless society. It puts you in a different place.
I know that as people come and talk to me, as I teach this stuff, as I'm teaching entree leadership, as I'm traveling around the country, speaking to businesses, to owners, to leaders, entrepreneurs, as they talk to me about this financial thing, there's always this hesitance. There's always this, gosh, do I really want to ask the questions? Do I really want to talk to them about this? And the thing that I find is a couple of things. One, most people are somewhat intimidated by handling their finances inside their business. The thing is that so many of us learn how to build a widget and sell a widget, and that's about as far as we get. Then we have to run all of this stuff behind the scenes. We have to do all this business stuff. And every single time when I'm talking, when I'm teaching leaders, I ask the question, whenever I'm talking about finances, I ask the question, how many people in here love accounting? Usually it's like 3 people out of like 100. And usually that's the CFOs that they've brought from their company or their accountant. Most entrepreneurs do not like accounting. So something so simple as just savings, just having retained earnings, just saving for emergencies, just investing, just having that money set aside is another one of those things that tends to intimidate people. Folks, I can tell you this. It's the same as your personal life. If you cannot grow your savings for your business and you don't realize that there's going to be a time that you need it, then you are going to fail. Do not fail. Don't allow it to happen. It is just as simple as Dave shared. It is that important. Make sure that you're doing it. Moving on. Our first interview of the year is going to be a killer one. This is great. This is fantastic. Rabbi Daniel Lappin, known worldwide as America's Rabbi, is a noted rabbinic scholar, best-selling author, and host of the Rabbi Daniel Lappin Show on San Francisco's KSFO. Yes, that's a big station. He is one of America's most eloquent speakers, and his ability to extract life principles from the Bible and transmit them in an entertaining manner has brought countless numbers of Jews and Christians closer to their respective faiths. In 2007, Newsweek magazine included him in its list of America's 50 most influential rabbis. So folks, do me a favor. Welcome to the show, Rabbi Daniel Lappin. Rabbi, thank you so much for coming on and doing this.
Well, it's a great honor. I really have been looking forward to this.
It is such a pleasure to have you on because you've made such an impact on our company, on us as individuals. We love the information that you've put out in Thou Shall Prosper. We love the information that you have online. I mean, it's everywhere. Everything that you put out is so life-changing. And I can tell you, I love what you say when you say that everybody needs a good rabbi, even us Christians. I love to hear that because really, the perspective that you have is something that so many people don't ever get. Can you please explain what that means to our listeners?
Well, yes. Look, I mean, it's a little lighthearted, obviously. Some people think it's devoted to producing job security for me. but what I really mean by that is that that the things that really matter to us in life tend to be spiritual, not physical. I don't mean religious. I don't mean virtuous. I don't mean pious. I'm talking about the world of the spirit and the world of the soul, which is as real if you are an atheist as it is if you are a faithful believer. The point is that that when I get hired for anything other than as a bathing suit model, which I got rejected for, by the way, which just goes to show that anti-Semitism is still alive. But when you get hired, you're being hired because you are honest, you're being hired because you have skills, you're being hired because you can speak effectively, you're being hired because you are persistent, you're courageous, you have the ability to keep going, you're cheerful. All of these are spiritual qualities. You're not being hired because you're male or female or black or white or tall or short. You're being hired primarily for spiritual qualities. And so what I specialize in as a rabbi is integrating the physical and spiritual in life. So when people say, why do I need a rabbi? I say, because you need somebody to reveal to you how the world really works, not just the physical side of the world, the spiritual integrated with it. And then you'll have an understanding of how the world really works.
Absolutely. I can tell you've definitely opened my eyes to a lot of things. A lot of things as a Christian that I've gone through the Bible and looked at and read through. And, you know, I read 1,000 times and then I hear one perspective from, you know, the Jewish perspective of something. And it's like, oh my gosh, how did I not know that? So I love that. One of my favorite books, I mean, top three books is Thou Shall Prosper. It is a powerful, powerful book. And I think the reason is I never understood the Jewish perspective on handling money. And there's so many things, there's so many fallacies that we have in life. And I love Craig Rochelle says that money or prosperity is the only blessing from God that we apologize for.
That is a great line. He's absolutely right. I speak at a lot of churches around the country. In fact, I just came back from speaking at 22 different churches in the United Kingdom a couple of weeks ago. But one of the things that distresses me is every now and then I come across a church where there is a negative feeling about money. And, you know, it's something like, you know, there'll be a discussion of filthy money and lucre is evil and the love of money is evil and now can we have a collection? And I never want to put anything in the basket because why would I want to corrupt the church with something so awful?
That's awesome. Why would I want to corrupt the church? That's awesome.
And it's very sad because in churches like that, I can see they're struggling to fix the roof and paint the walls and pay the pastor. And all of that flows from a negative attitude towards money. Now, look, everyone knows that Jews are disproportionately good with money, and my entire mission is to make all of those tips and tools and techniques accessible to everybody. Not to say there's no poor Jews. There are some poor Jews, obviously, but disproportionately, Jews are good with money. And I had a research to find out, you know, is it because Jews rip people off and they Jew people, as the dictionary would have it? No, it isn't. There are far too many Christians with long-term business relationships with Jews for that to be the explanation. It surely isn't. And it must be the vast body of information in ancient Jewish wisdom that becomes integrated into the Jewish family around the dinner table and through education and through everything else that that produces this. And I thought, okay, we are going to work on making this accessible to everybody. And that's essentially what I do.
I love it. There's something that you just said that I don't think people understand, especially in our, I would say, Western civilization, but probably around the world as well. The Jewish people have so much incredible community. It's like you just said, I teach this stuff for a living over the air, on the website, you know, in conferences, all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
But you don't stop there. That's just one part of what you do. You're teaching it at the dinner table.
When it comes to our children, yes, and we encourage people who we help to train and teach and coach on adopting principles of ancient Jewish wisdom that I lay out in the book Thou Shalt Prosper, and I lay out in the book Buried Treasure, because, you know, successfully making money is connected with successfully living. There's not a whole lot of people who've got utterly messed up family and social lives but are making money, or people who are who have fantastic social family lives but who are making no money. Generally, those things go together, and they should go together. So when we are working with people, we say, look, first of all, make sure that you involve your spouse and your children in your work. It doesn't mean they have to show up for work with you at 7 o'clock in the morning,
right,
but make sure they know what you do. Make sure they understand the process, how you serve other human beings, what your job is all about. Make sure they understand that. Make sure they have an understanding of what the budget is and what things cost. And don't keep your kids in the dark about money. It's a tragedy. Terrible that schools do that. The least we can do is not collaborate.
And it's something I think so many people that have made so many bad mistakes become so, they're afraid to share that information with their kids. They're afraid to walk them through because they've made bad mistakes. And they need to understand if you do even the bad stuff, if you share the mistakes you've made, you're teaching your kids. Now, what is the biggest misconception you find with most people when it comes to money?
I think that most people probably in one way or another believe that you take money. You don't make money. And one of the ways of telling is if you feel any embarrassment about money, then it's because you feel it's testament to the fact that you've taken it away from somebody else.
Wow.
If you find trouble quoting the price for your services, if you find trouble proudly saying what it is that you do and recognizing that every dollar bill is a certificate of a good deed that you did for somebody else.
Now, let's stop for there for just a second, because I want people to understand what you just said. Because you say this, and I don't think people understand this. Go back, if you can, talk about the certificate of good deed.
The way I put it is this. I say, look, imagine that I'm a roofer, and your roof's leaking. Sunday afternoon, I wanted to take my kids to the zoo, but instead you call me up, your roof's leaking, fine. I come fix your roof. That night, I say to my wife, listen, we didn't make the zoo, but the least we can do is you and me, let's go out for a nice steak and chips dinner, you know? And we walk into the restaurant, and the restaurateur says, what? You want me to go into my hot kitchen and slave over a stove just so you can have steak and chips? And I said, well, yeah, that's sort of the idea. He said, well, what have you done for anyone else? He said, if I'm going to do a service for you, I want to know you're part of the whole system. I say, well, as it happens, I spent the afternoon on somebody's roof, fixing their roof and stopping the rain coming in. I did help somebody. He said, look, you know, anyone can spin a yarn. Can you prove that? I say, sure. Pull out $100 out of our pocket. I'll wave it under his nose. See that? That proves that I fixed somebody's roof. So he said, hey, sorry, no problem. Sit down, make yourself comfortable. I'll be back with your food in a minute. At the end of the meal, he says, by the way, I'm going to have to take my kids to the orthodontist in a week's time. He's probably going to want to know that I've done something for somebody you know, I'd like a certificate of performance from you to prove that I serve you. And I say, sure, I've got these. How many do you want? He says, I'll take 60. I say, okay, fine, no problem. Here they are. And off he goes. That's what money is really all about. And that's why we should be proud of the money we make. You know, unless you're a fraudulent con man or you're a hold-up artist or you're a bank robber. But, you know, if you're not taking the money from people at the point of a gun, and if you're not compelling the government to take it from other people and give it to you, then you should be proud of the money you make. And Jews are. It's a tremendous asset because when you don't feel good about what you do, you cannot possibly exert yourself to the fullest. I mean, in a nutshell, nobody succeeds at any activity that deep down he considers to be morally reprehensible.
But wait, I don't understand. We hear so much in the news, business is evil, isn't it?
As governments grow to become, if I may say, pardon me, but somewhat tyrannical, when that happens, one of the things that, you know, the person that is who is the enemy is the person who has money and the person who creates wealth, because such a government wants to be the only source of good and wants to make people utterly dependent upon it. So the independent person becomes the enemy. And here, one of the terribly dangerous terms, and, you know, we won't go off on the politics here, it's a waste of time, but one of the terribly dangerous terms is fairness. Mm. Oh, the rich people must pay their fair share. First of all, the term rich and poor may apply to kangaroos and camels and cats because everyone knows how much food animals need, but there is no way to use that terminology with human beings. It's an incorrect terminology, and one of the worst things you can ever do is think of yourselves as poor.
I absolutely agree with that. I mean, it is a true mindset.
Yeah.
It's
a terrible thing.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, what's fair? Is it fair that I have to work Monday to Friday? Well, you know, it depends. Compared to film stars who work 12 weeks a year, maybe not. Compared to people who have to work 24/7 to survive, yeah. Fairness doesn't mean anything on its own. It's not an objective measure of any kind.
So business isn't evil.
So I'd say one of the biggest misconceptions, and by the way, it's propagated not only in politics but also entertainment, where I've checked in primetime television and on most movies. You know, think James Bond. The evil guys are always wealthy businessmen.
<They are.
laughs> Almost without exception.
That's so true.
You know, anybody would think that business professionals in the top right-hand drawer of their desk do not keep daytimers or iPads, but what they really keep are stainless, snub-nosed 357 Magnum revolvers.
It is crazy how this is the concept, isn't it?
Okay, but when people buy, you know, fine, I'm not going to change the entertainment business, I'm not going to change the world, but I just want to change people who buy my book. I want to change people who take my programs. I want to change the people who work with Dave Ramsey to transform their financial lives. They have to escape this appalling and seditious mindset that can sabotage your success.
Oh, I love that. I love that. That's exactly it. It does sabotage your success. I heard you once say that God wants us to become obsessively preoccupied with each other's needs. Why is that?
Well, this goes back to the misconception of money. There is only one way to obtain money in an honest and transparent environment, and that is to serve God's other children. Now, the reason I put it that way is that when I was a youngster and got my first car, somebody helped me out enormously. It was a member of my father's synagogue. My father was a famous rabbi. And afterwards, when I asked him, you know, how much I owed him, I was so grateful he got my little car running again. He said nothing. I said, what do you mean nothing? He said, well, your dad once did me a favor I can never repay him for. So I thought I better be honest about this. And I said, Mr. Goldberg, I just need to tell you, this isn't my father's car, it's mine. He said, son, when you grow a bit older, you'll discover that one of the best things you can ever do for a person is help their kids.
Wow.
And I think to myself, why would our Father in heaven feel any different? Now, you know, not everyone's religious, but bottom line is, when you are serving other people, when a person kneels down in front of me at the Nordstrom shoe store I patronize and takes off my old grotty sneakers and puts on a nice pair with red lights that flash in the hill when you walk, he is serving me. Now, I understand he wants to get a commission. I understand he wants to get paid. But I shouldn't be elitist and arrogant projecting into his head. I should just be grateful for the fact that he is helping me and he is serving me. And so we got to absorb into our mindset that we don't chase the money. We chase opportunities to serve other people. Chasing the money turns you into a venal person that radiates desperation from every pore.
Wow.
But being desirous of serving other people is all you have to do. Because if you serve enough people, you'll get more than enough money. The money will flow automatically.
Absolutely. And it is very hard to walk away egotistical with shoes that flash.
Right. And so that's why I say, you know, does God want us to be rich? I really don't know. He hasn't confided in me to that extent. But I do know he wants us to be obsessively preoccupied with supplying the needs and wants and desires of his other children.
And now we've got all kinds of entrepreneurs and leaders listening right now. And so, folks, here's what I want you to take away from that. You get so caught up, and when I say you, I'm speaking to myself.
All of us do, it's true.
We get so caught up with cranking out our widget. We get so caught up with working like crazy and stressing out to sell our widget. Here's the thing. Help people. If you will help people, the money will come. If you will take care of God's children, the money will follow. Now, Rabbi, here we have a tendency to believe in America. If you were to walk up to the average person on the street and say, what is worship?
Yeah.
The average person is going to say, well, it's that, you know, 20 minutes on Sunday when we're singing and praising God, which is awesome. We have 20 minutes every week that we worship God. The Jewish perspective on that is not the same, is it?
No, and this is why I believe that many languages use the same word service for worship service and for customer service. Mm. Because one can serve God by worshiping him. One can also serve God by taking care of his children.
So it is the belief that you are truly worshiping God.
See, I think money is holy. I really do, because it's proof that I have served in some way one of God's other children. That's how money got into my bank account or got into my hand or my pocket. Only because I pleased another human being.
Oh, no other way. I like that.
No, I think money's holy, for sure.
So as we look at, and the reason why I bring this up is because I like to redefine the concept of worship for people who haven't seen it this way. Because again, this is how you opened up my eyes. The Jewish perspective on worship is during my work week. It derives from what I do to take care of God's children. If I am truly taking care of his kids, I'm worshiping him in the process.
Yes.
That is something that we need to understand, people. That is something we need to know.
I mean, I'll put it this way. I get to speak at college graduation ceremonies every now and then, and it's depressing because invariably there's some more important speaker than me speaking before me, who gets up and says, you know, you're the most privileged people, you've had years of education, and now it's time for you to give back. You need to think of public service. And then I get up and I say, you know, with all due respect, so-and-so who you just heard from is probably smarter than me and more experienced than me and older than me, but I'm going to contradict them. I'm going to tell you the very last thing I want you to do is go into public service. Let me tell you what public service is. It is a euphemism for politics. And if you go into politics, there's just going to be that more hands in my wallet. I don't want you to go into politics. I want you all to go into making money. Because if you're all focused on making money, number one, you are very harmlessly employed. Number two, there's a pretty good chance you are going to improve my life by discovering a new piece of software or a new gadget or a new service. You know, FedEx. Fred Smith didn't go into politics. He started figuring out how to improve my life. When I next see him, I'm going to shake his hands and say, thank you. I can't tell you how you've changed my life. I would like that for all of you students out there. You should all become rich, because that's evidence that you've not gone into public service, but that you've truly served the public.
Absolutely. Tithing. This is something that comes up all the time with me. People are always emailing me, going to the blog, leaving questions, all kinds of stuff about tithing. It always comes up. Two things. One, is tithing important? Two, do you tithe from your business or what you take home?
Okay, so the first thing, of course, is I do believe it is important. I think it's wrong to say when I have money, I will give. I think one of the mechanisms for getting money is giving.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say something controversial, and I know you won't shy away from controversy as long as it's true, right?
That's correct.
But do you know those business clubs where you go for a breakfast meeting once a month and you exchange business cards and all that sort of thing?
Mm-hmm.
I don't really think those are very helpful. The reason is because everybody there is on the prowl.
Right.
Everybody's there because of what they can get out of being there. And the truth is that most of us choose to do business with people we know, we like, and we trust. Here's something I do in audiences all the time, and it's always so funny. I first of all ask people to put up their hands if they've got a good doctor, or they like their surgeon, or they like their medical professional, whatever it is. Most people's hands go up. I then say, now, of those of you who put up your hands, how many of you know what medical school your doctor attended? People start giggling. I say, how many of you know whereabouts in his class he graduated? Come on. How many of you actually know that he did go to medical school?
Nice.
I mean, I know you've seen the diploma, but put me in front of a computer and a printer, see what a diploma I can produce in 10 minutes. So why do you go to your doctor? You don't know that he went to medical school. I'll tell you why. You go to your doctor probably because someone you know and like and trust recommended him or her.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the main reason. And this doctor makes you feel comfortable, makes you feel confident. That's why you're there. And once again, it's a heart, not a head issue. You know, once again, it revolves around this idea that that we react to people in spiritual ways. And so put it this way, just in a nutshell, bottom line is a whole lot more business is done between people who meet at church, who meet on the board of directors of the symphony orchestra, who meet at Boy Scouts or PTAs, rather than at business development groups. Because when you meet somebody who is out giving of himself, you intuitively want to like that person. When you find out that that person provides the services you happen to be looking for, guess where you go? Tithing puts you in that framework. Tithing puts you among the givers, not the takers of the world. And here's the best part of it, and that is that it's impossible to be a giver without other people finding out. Well, it's not impossible, but in the real world, if you are a giver, people get to know that, and that is a wonderful thing to have known about you.
That is probably one of the best ways I've heard that put. I love that. It puts you among the givers instead of the takers. Do you, when you're looking at it from a business perspective, a lot of folks out there are always saying, you know, do I tithe on the money that's coming into the business, or do I tithe when I take my draw or my pay from the business?
No, tithing is personal. You see, if you tithe, again, let me just say I'm saying what I believe on this and what ancient Jewish wisdom says on this. But if people receive any different advice from their own spiritual guides, from their own pastors or priests or whatever
sure,
it is.
Sure.
You should follow whatever is part of your group and whatever is part of your system. But from the point of view of ancient Jewish wisdom, you wouldn't tithe from the business because, number one, you have other partners and stakeholders in the business, and you have no right to take money that is sort of part of the bigger accounting.
Yeah, it's still active in the business, correct?
Yeah, right. Exactly. If you have shareholders, then it's obvious you don't have a right to tithe. I'm always terribly upset when I see corporations making donations to charities. They have no right to do that. That's shareholder money. They have no right to do it. And if shareholders want to give charity, they'll give charity out of their dividends and out of their money. But for a company to decide where my money should go is outrageous.
Right.
So I don't think businesses should. Now, even if you are a sole proprietor of your own business, you know, you might have employees, you might have vendors. If you're tithing out of the business, then who decides whether your supplier, who's been waiting for 30 days to be paid, who decides whether he gets paid or your church gets paid?
Mm-hmm. I like it.
And so these are not good conflicts to have. Tithing is a personal thing. All the money that comes out of the business and into your pocket, that should be tithed. And by the way, after tax, not before tax, because taxing is also not money that ever comes to you.
I do know, and it's not a promise. Correct me if I'm wrong, because you're no more way more about this than I do. But God doesn't promise that He's going to bless you with money when you tithe. He promises blessings, which
actually it is money.
It is. Okay.
Absolutely. It's so much so, by the way, that in my book, Buried Treasure, I make very clear that in ancient Hebrew, when certain words have dual meanings, those dual meanings are very powerfully linked. So one of the things I point out in Buried Treasure, for instance, is that the word face in Hebrew not only means face, but it also means inside, the deepest innermost parts of something.
Okay.
And the idea is the face is the window into the soul. Everybody knows that.
Right.
And so when I look at a word that says face and inside, okay, great. Face is the way into the inside. That means something. In Hebrew, tithing and wealth are the same word. In other words, the avenue to wealth includes tithing. You don't tithe when you get wealthy. You tithe in order to become wealthy.
Wow. I love it. Okay, that is good to know. I need to take more on Hebrew. I'm going to come visit you. You can teach me in a couple hours, right? Is that all it takes?
About 10 hours.
About 10 hours, okay. speaking of learning Hebrew, what is the Hebrew word for retirement?
Oh, that's so interesting you should say that. There's certain words that for very good reason do not exist in the Hebrew language. Now, obviously, modern Hebrew in the state of Israel has had to come up with certain words because they're not dealing with life philosophies and timeless truths. They're dealing with running a modern economy. So they have words. So, for instance, there's no word for television, obviously, in the Hebrew. So the state of Israel came up with their own word for television, which is a very difficult to pronounce, deeply profound Hebrew word, and it goes something like this, televizia.
That's difficult.
Telephone, right? There's no telephones in the Bible. Moses didn't phone Joshua, but modern Israel needs a phone. So they have a fantastically complex Hebrew word for a telephone. It goes something like this, telephone. If we look at the Lord's language and sort of take a look and see what, in terms of enduring realities, are not found in the Hebrew language, we don't have words like hero, no such word, because there isn't such a thing as any one human being that we should follow. We should learn from different human beings. We learn different things.
Wow.
To say he's my hero implies perfection among people, which, as we know, simply doesn't exist. If you do have the concept of retirement in your spiritual, mental vocabulary, if that word is sort of resting in your soul and you are subconsciously waiting till you can hit 65 or whatever it is and quit working, what you really are saying is that all along you are not working to serve other human beings. You're working for what you can get.
Yeah.
When you got enough, you're quitting and going home. And to me, it's never been a surprise that sadly when people retire, they often deteriorate physically. My own spiritual viewpoint is, well, what does God need you for if you've stopped serving other people?
Yeah. I heard a statistic. Again, this was hearsay. Folks, don't nail me down to this. But I heard a statistic that said that 80% of men who retire and don't have something fulfilling to do afterwards die within 5 years.
Oh, awful.
So
doesn't surprise me, but it's sad.
And it's just not the way that God created us. In a little bit, we're going to continue on with the interview for the crystalcurtle.com readers. I put out there for them to ask questions of you, and they went crazy.
Oh, really? How wonderful.
They're very excited about that. But before we do that, I've got one last question, and that is about your brand new book, Buried Treasure, which you wrote with your amazing wife. Tell us about the book and why you guys wrote that.
You know, we wrote that because there really is only one continuous language in the world that for 3,000 years or more has been consistent. And what I mean by that is that, you know, you can stop anybody you like on the streets of Athens and ask them if they can read for you the works of Homer in the Iliad and the Odyssey. And they can't, because although they're Greek, it's so much change has come through Greek culture, the language is quite different. It's literally impenetrable. You can stop someone on the streets of Beijing and show them an inscription on an early dynasty vase and ask them what it means. They won't be able to read it. It's, you know, too much time has elapsed. But you can stop any kid on the streets of Jerusalem or Tel Aviv and awesome to read to you the words of Jeremiah the prophet from 3,000 years ago, and they'll read it to you and tell you what it means. Hebrew is a remarkable language, and people understand it as the Lord's language. The second governor of the Plymouth colony in the 1600s, William Bradford, wrote the first 20 pages of his history of the Plymouth plantation in Hebrew in his own handwriting. He knew the language. He understood, and he said, this is the Lord's language. That's why I learned it. So we decided to do a book for non-Hebrew readers, non-Hebrew speakers, that would show some of the wonder, that would unpack some of the magic that is embedded in the Lord's language. And that's what Buried Treasure is all about. And so they're very practical lessons for the areas of finance, business, family, friends, relationships that spring directly from the structure of words in the language. People are absolutely amazed by it and get a lot of benefit in their life from it.
I just got my copy literally yesterday, so I'm really excited to tear into that. Rabbi, thank you so much for doing this for us. Folks, we are going to be giving away copies of Rabbi's books. So if you would like a copy of that, make sure that you go to chrislicurdle.com for your chance to get one of those. And is it okay if you stick around with us and do the extended interview for the chrislicurdle.com readers?
Great.
Great. Fantastic. Thank you, Rabbi. I really appreciate you doing this. This has been an honor for me.
Thank you very much. I've been looking forward to it, and I hope we'll do it again.
Rabbi Daniel Lappin, folks. Wow. I mean, wow. Wow.
It's a lot of wows.
That's a lot. Wow. That was, I'm going to say, folks, that was one of the best, that was one of the best interviews we've ever had. Am I right?
Yeah, it was great.
Colin shaking his head in the booth. Wow. that was phenomenal.
Yeah. I mean, there is so much to take away from that, but I mean, what do you take away?
I don't even know where to start with what I just took away from that. I think probably the most, or one of the most impactful things is when he said that successfully making money is connected with successful living.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, everything that we talk about, everything that we teach, everything that we're trying to accomplish here, we're trying to help people make money. We're trying to help them lead a successful business, run a successful business. But like he said, when he said it, it hit home when I think of how many people I've counseled and coached over the years. Successfully making money is connected to successful living.
Yeah. And I mean, walking into this interview, I didn't know I would come away with a lesson on customer service either.
I know.
I mean, but, you know, when he said, you know, money is holy and the proof that I, you know, and then money is the proof that I've served one of God's other children and that's how it ends up in my bank account.
Yeah.
I mean, that's customer service at its best.
That is just powerful.
Is that your worship is by, you know, serving God's children.
And the funny thing is that I have been going to church for decades. And every time this concept of tithing has come up, and I've researched tithing myself because this is what we do. But every single time, it's so funny because you always hear people say, you know, there's the promise of the blessing. God's going to bless you. No, he doesn't promise money.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hear from somebody who has studied, you know, from the Jewish perspective, from the Hebrew itself, and he comes and he says, no, that word actually has two meanings, and one of those is wealth, which makes so much sense. If you give to God, and God doesn't need your money. Mm-hmm. You're not giving to God. You're giving because you have to give. If you can become a giver, which means that you're putting it in the hands of somebody else to hopefully do good for somebody else, if you will do this, then God promises you that he will bless you out of this. Wow.
Yeah.
Powerful. Colin, what a show. My gosh.
You can't see this in podcast land, but Colin raised his hands.
He raised his hands. He's excited. Whew. Well, folks, I hope you got out of that what we got out of that. I know that everybody I talk to says, man, I go back and listen to these podcasts, you know, over and over and over again. I go back through them over and over and again. This is one I will be listening to multiple times as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just multiple times because it was so stinking powerful. All right. So We are going to be giving away some of his books, some of Rabbi Lapin's books on ChrisLocurdo.com. We are going to, again, we're going to do the extended interview, so you'll be able to hear that next week on ChrisLocurdo.com. But go today to ChrisLocurdo.com. We're going to be doing a book giveaway today, and we will be doing one next week as well.
We've got two.
We've got two different books
two
we're
different
giving away.
Two different books.
We're giving away Thou Shall Prosper and his brand new book, Buried Treasure. Mm-hmm. So either one of those, today or next week, make sure that you get on over to ChrisLocurdo.com for your chance to win that. Coming up this Thursday at 9 a.m. Central, we will be hosting the Entree Leadership Live Chat. Come stop by for an hour to kick off your work day and learn from fellow Entree leaders. This is your chance to ask me pretty much anything you want to. By the way, did we mention that it's free? It is. Every single time. Also, don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Entree Leadership or at Chris Locurdo, or email us your questions and comments to podcast@entreeleadership.com. And for daily leadership, make sure that you get to ChrisLocurdo.com and subscribe. Don't forget to head on over to the business section of DaveRamsey.com and sign up for your free monthly newsletter, which has got great information. And we have got our Entree Leadership Master Series event coming up May 5th through the 11th at our headquarters here in Nashville.
I've heard that that is like already almost sold out.
Yeah, it's going to be a pretty exciting event, folks. This is big. This is back home. We're doing it here. Mm-hmm. And for those of you that have been to Master Series, you know we do it right. So for more information, visit DaveRamsey.com/Entree Leadership or call the Entree Leadership team at 888-227-3223. Baxter, that puts another episode in the books.
Everybody knows my nickname now.
Are people calling you Baxter?
Everybody call me Baxter.
There you go. There you go. We have to thank the people who make this happen every single time. Chris Mefford, our executive producer, Colin Fatke, and now Bobby Robertson, who are in the booth, our audio engineer extraordinaires. Becky Powell, our Baxter, our queen of pretty much just everything on the planet.
It never does get old.
Obviously, the incredible Rabbi Daniel Lapin, and of course, Dave Ramsey. Folks, take this information out. Change your life, change your leadership, change your business. And we hope that you join us on the next episode of the Entree Leadership Podcast.